bringing you inside the latest stories in sports business and advice from some of the best in the industry. This is BSSF's Sports Business Podcast, presented by the Business of Sports Society at Fordham. Welcome into episode 7 of BSSF Sports Business Podcast. Happy to have you all back with us this week. Back once again with Alex Woltz. Happy to have you. So it's been a crazy week all around. New sports, just so much going on. How are you holding up this week?
Thank you for asking, Nick. And you're right, it is an interesting week. We're not going to ignore the fact that there's an election still in the process as we're recording this. So it's good to take a little bit of a break here and talk some sports and get our minds off things. So good to be with you, Nick.
For sure. Yeah, I'm happy to take my mind off of so much going on right now. So hopefully we can be a little bit of a reprieve for you. Just talking about some sports business for this week and just some of the things that have happened over the past 2 weeks or so. One of the big news stories coming out yesterday was about the NBA starting to near a deal where the players will come in and the season will start on December 22nd. It should be around a 72-game season. That's the expectation for right now. This is the best plan for all the business models and all the owners. Players were looking to have it start on Martin Luther King Day, about mid-January. That's now been deviated to starting right before Christmas and then have kind of a big Christmas Day, which is kind of something we mentioned in the past would be a great idea for the NBA. So it looks like they're heading in that direction. We'll come back to that in a bit. ESPN, and more so their parent company, Disney, is getting into a big bidding war with Comcast NBC for Sunday Night Football television rights. We're going to go into that and some of the layoffs that came from ESPN today, really announcing over 500 positions are going to be cut. Is that a result of this bidding war that Disney feels they're close to it, so they need to shed some weight, try and find some extra funds by cutting off some of these positions? Time will tell. We'll see what happens. This one piece of news kind of flew right under the radar, but we're going to be talking about it. The Utah Jazz were purchased for $1.6 billion. And this is, kind of the second big domino to fall after Steve Cohen bought the Mets, second team to be bought since the start of the pandemic. Seems as though this is going to become a trend. Now we're seeing some news about the Baltimore Orioles. They're looking for some bidders. Other NFL teams could potentially be going down that road. So we're going to address that a little bit later on. Hitting some sports betting news, going back to the elections briefly, and nothing political, but three states approved sports betting on their referendums: Maryland, Louisiana, and South Dakota. So those are three more states that companies like FanDuel, DraftKings, MGM, all these betting companies can really start to go head first into some of those states as well. Obviously, some big sports news that dominated the headlines for a while after the World Series was that positive COVID test that occurred on the really during the eighth inning. They found out that Justin Turner had this positive test. Kind of the ramifications for MLB with that. And it actually led to a partnership deal with Lysol, which I think is kind of ironic given that situation, that whole situation. But we're going to be talking about that partnership and kind of what happened the past few days. And then lastly, just a quick mention on how Derrick Henry is going to have a new endorsement deal. And that led completely from his stiff arm of Josh Norman, which kind of exploded his popularity during that rare Tuesday night game a few weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go over all this in this hour with you guys. So we'll go back up to the top with the NBA and their deal to start on December 27th. It makes the most sense for business. I think it's going to be the most effective. The one thing is, they're going to leave up fans to the local and state governments, which, of course, that means in, where we are in New York City, it'll probably be no fans for quite a while, but you can go down to, Miami Heat, where Florida is not being as restrictive. You can have quite a few thousand fans in there. So there's going to be quite a discretion here in terms of who's going to be allowed to have fans, who's not, and who's going to be bringing in more, you know, revenue than the rest. So let's try and start to dive in a little bit.
Yeah, there's so many different angles that you bring up there. I'm going to start just with the date itself, because I think there's so many things even in that that you could kind of take away, because I do have to say the NBA is in a difficult spot. There isn't really a right answer where, unlike other leagues that had, you know, expanded playoffs and more teams involved, the NBA didn't necessarily do that. You know, they had the play-in games and such, but they started 16-team playoff like you usually have. So what that means is that almost half the league has not been playing basketball since the pandemic ended in March. And you're given a bit of an advantage to those teams. You know, they don't mind starting in December, where somebody like LeBron James might not be as keen to start in such an early date. So you could argue that there's some competition imbalance there, but I'm kind of with you. I do think that this does feel like the best overall time the NBA could start, because think about a February 1st start date. That pins you right at the Super Bowl. That pins you right at such a time where the league's momentum is going to have a difficult time taking off, when it's already, as we've mentioned so many times, already seems to be struggling more than in the past. So I do feel like the NBA needs some sort of lift. They need, you know, they need a time to return to their original schedule, to carve out that unique space that they've always had. And Christmas, like you mentioned, is a perfect time to do that. You know, we get the uniforms, we get the sneakers, we get, you know, all the excitement that comes with Christmas Day games. And I think even though it's going to look a little bit different, I think getting that start and getting that unique position is exactly what the NBA needs to get a lot of that momentum back that they've lost during the pandemic.
For sure. The timing of it is going to be perfect right before Christmas, as you said. And it's something, and that's actually a very good point. It's something I didn't think about, the merchandising end of it. You know, it is Christmas. People are buying, you know, holiday sneakers. It really is a perfect time, and you can advertise throughout all of December leading up to the December 22nd start. That's a really good point you made there. You know, like we said, it's the most logical for business, whether fans come back in or not. I mean, it also depends on, you know, a second wave, which we're kind of seeing now. I think it said today that there were over 100,000 cases, you know, in the U.S. for the first time, all in one day. I mean, that's a ton. So it'll depend kind of on that to see if that calms down. And then another big part of it depends on the Olympics, which a lot of people have been talking about, and all the leagues have been talking about ending before the Olympics. You know, the sports, especially the NHL, has to worry about, you know, NBC being the television broadcaster of the Olympics. But even the NBA, who, you know, Turner and ESPN don't have any coverage of the Olympics. But even they are worried about that conflict of trying to have the NBA finals during, you know, the opening ceremonies of the Olympics. It's not going to do well ratings wise. And we already see how bad the ratings tanked in this NBA finals. The last thing they need is to be going up against the Olympic Games. And that's something that, you know, both the NBA and NHL are thinking about right now. They want to make sure they are done by the Olympics. That's a big deal for them.
I don't even think it's just a ratings perspective. I also think it's a player's perspective, because obviously players are going to want to be in the Olympics. You know, there was a lot of excitement. I know in this year, in 2020, a lot of big players that actually skipped out on the FIBA World Cup or a few years back, they wanted to be at the Olympics this year. It's a very big deal to a lot of the league's players. And if we started February 1st, and if we were to miss out on the Olympics and not give the players the opportunity to participate, or having to make a choice between the NBA and the Olympics, I think there'd be complications with that. So, like you mentioned, I do think moving it to this December time slot, letting the season finish, giving the necessary time to the Olympics, both in the ratings, because I think there is going to be a lot of excitement about the Olympics, because now it's been delayed another year, a lot of buildup, even if it looks different. I know there's a lot of questions about what that's going to look like, but we know what's happening. We know when it's going to be. And I think the NBA certainly is cognizant of that. And that probably does play a big part in this December 22 start date.
Yeah, that's true. You know, the players want to be there. You know, it's, I think, in the future years, you could maybe see even MLB players want to go to the Olympics too. That's further down the line in that next CBA. But for sure, the NBA players want to be a part of it. And from the business side, I think another aspect of that is the NBA partners, because there are some that, you know, have Olympic partnerships, or even, you know, just have corporate hospitality events at the Olympics. It's such an international event that, you know, companies from all over the world host events there. Whether that's, you know, actually part of the Olympics or outside of the actual games. So I think that's big for the partners, and whatever vested interest the owners have in the Olympics games, if there is any. I think it makes the most sense on both sides.
Yeah. And I think with the NBA too, it's just interesting to think about how they can get back on schedule, because that's something we've talked about so much, is that this season kind of threw everything in a whirl. And it's like, what does the NBA need to do to get back to where they need to be? A February 1st start with a 72-game season, I don't think would do it. And if you were, you would need to put back-to-backs and a lot of burden on the schedule when players have already been working very hard the past few months. So I think there's a lot of challenges with that. And if the ratings are any indication, the NBA does need to get back on a normal schedule. That has to be a priority for the league. And whether or not there's fans in the stands, which we'll move into now, I think it's important that they do hit December, because even though the pandemic might be in a dangerous time, and the league's stance on the pandemic has been one that they are very strict with it and want to keep their players safe, I think the schedule from a business perspective might be a little bit more important for the long-term fidelity of the league.
Right. I think that's kind of a similar problem the NHL is running into, where, you know, the owners and the partners, they want to be done by the Olympics too, mm-hmm. but their schedule, I mean, they're talking about a potential February 1 start. That means you're going to have to reduce a lot of number of games if you want to finish before late July, and get back on that regular schedule. I don't know how they do that unless, you know, they kind of push the season back to January, add some more games, or if you do it in February. Gary Bettman has said the lowest the league will go is 56 games, which even that is a big reduction from 82. Yeah. You can see the NBA is going to pull off 72 games, which I think is a very good job.
That's a good number.
To get at least 72 games in there. And I think there's also that number 72 is significant when it comes to partners in their contracts. I think that was actually a specific number that had significance when it came to partners and their contracts and getting the full number, like the full amount for the year. So the fact that the NBA was able to pull off saying, you know, or at least will most likely be playing 72 games, is significant. The NHL is now looking at this saying, well, now we're kind of in a tough position, because you have some owners on their end saying it may not make sense financially for us to play this year because it'll be too expensive if you have too few games, not enough fans. And once again, your overhead's going to be through the roof. So now they're in a bad predicament, but hopefully the NBA will be a model for some of the other leagues going into their new season. And, you know, We kind of mentioned fans in the NBA a few minutes ago and having to really depend on which state, but they are saying, at least in terms of arena suites, they want at least 25 to 50% capacity, hopefully to have some amount of fans to start the season. That was reported just a few minutes ago by Bleacher Report. To me, that makes more than enough sense. Like, it is very possible to pull off having that amount of people in a suite, because you're able to spread out, you know, even, you know, usually there's about like three rows of seats in front of the suites. You could easily put plexiglass in between the seats, and in terms of like the suites, sorry, in between the suites. And then you can space people out in those seats, so that way they're separated. And then inside the suite, you can have, you know, marked spaces on which chairs can be used and stuff. I feel that it's very easy to social distance inside a suite and be able to have fans in that way. And now, obviously, most fans can't be put in suites, but at the very least, that's where a lot of corporate events happen. That's where, you know, you're getting a lot of revenue from those suites. So having those open and keeping those distance, I feel, is very doable and really should be pursued, because it'll bring in a lot more revenue, especially on the partnership side, because companies still want to bring their people in. And, you know, if a company can tell one of their clients, you know, hey, look, we can still get into a, you know, Miami Heat game, like, let's go down there, you know, that's going to be an even more exclusive opportunity for those partners. So, you know, having that opportunity is going to be a real key for the NBA. Hopefully they pursue it.
It's interesting to me how the NBA's stance has changed from where we were a few months ago to where we are now. Because if you recall back when the pandemic started, it was very much, we're going to do the bubble now. We know we are confident in the safety of our players. If this works, we may have to do it another year. We may have to go a whole another season in a bubble and to under these restraints, because safety is that number one priority. But I think the league realized a few things during the bubble. Number one, the physical, the mental, emotional tax on its players, that can't be ignored. Number two, the financial hits that we've talked about. Number one, and how much they threw at Disney to make this work, because we know it's in the hundreds of millions. And sure, they avoided a revenue loss, but it's a lot of money goes into that. And we've talked about that. And obviously the television rating. So all that together, I think, told the NBA, we can't do this again. We need to get into arenas. That's step number one, which it seems like it's a pretty much a foregone conclusion is going to happen. And step number two now is, how do we get fans in the stands? And to me, I do agree with you that arena suites are the best option. I don't foresee the NBA pursuing it unless they're very confident they could do it safely. Because you think about what the NBA's stance has been, they focused on safety as a number one priority since the beginning. And I'd imagine they might consider testing people before they come into arena seats, because Adam Silver talked about the importance of rapid testing. If that's something that they're capable of doing, I imagine that they will, to make sure that fans are in there safely, that they can 50% capacity is a pretty good amount. I know it's arena suites and that they're a little more spaced out, but that's still a good amount of people. And I think the NBA is going to have a lot of protocol in place in order to make sure that they can do this safely, because as you mentioned, the revenue lift from that and the opportunities they can get from that are certainly, I think, worth it if they could do it in a safe way.
Yeah, I'm not saying they can't, you know, do tests when those people come in, like the rapid testing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I noticed a significant change. I would say probably one of the last games before the finals ended, when Adam Silver had a press conference saying, next season we are returning to as normal as possible.
Yes.
That was when the change happened, because the NBA realized this is not sustainable. Mm-hmm. As much as they want to be there for the health of their players, and you know, like you said, it ended up having more of an emotional toll on them, you know, and a physical toll on them than putting it in arenas as usual. So I think they noticed that from the player standpoint, but more so from the business standpoint, it was just not financially feasible, and they needed to return to as normal of a normal as possible. So that'll finish up talking about the NBA for now. We're going to switch over to some sports media news, where, you know, Disney, the parent company of ESPN, is making a huge push in the billions of dollars to take NBC's Sunday Night Football from them. And there has been buzz for a while about NBC wanting to get into the Super Bowl rotation. And, you know, it's something they've been talking about for years. The pushback from the NFL was, you know, you're not on a network, you're on cable. So, you know, I could foresee what ends up happening is ESPN keeps Monday Night Football, but if they purchase Sunday Night Football, put it on ABC, mm-hmm. they're into the Super Bowl rotation. I think that's what Disney's looking at right now. However, that would be a huge blow to NBC. I don't know what they would do to try and make up for that. This also comes on the heels today of ESPN announcing their biggest jobs layoff in their history. They're talking about over 500 jobs being cut, 300 permanent jobs that were cut, and then another 200 that were open positions that have been canceled. So it comes on the heels of that, and many are saying that's because Disney senses they are close on pulling off this Sunday Night Football deal and need every single penny to make it work.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not going to say I'm shocked by this, because we know that Disney, as a conglomerate, loves to pursue things, pretty much anything. And football, routinely, they wanted to get involved with the Super Bowl. I think that's easily one of the largest television programs that there is in this country, perhaps even the world. So currently, obviously, ESPN's deal doesn't have any handle in that. And Monday Night Football is often getting restructured. They've had a lot of different broadcast crews in there. A lot of different things have changed. I think they're at a point right now, though, where Monday Night Football is in a very good place. I think Steve Levy, Lewis Riddick, that's a good team that they have assembled there on Monday night. And I think people are enjoying it. And that might give the NFL the confidence to say, hey, we can give you Sunday Night Football. We can give you the opportunity to have a Super Bowl. And now that there's a broadcast team there that can back that up and that can do it in a way that people would really enjoy it. So I'm not shocked by this. I think it makes sense that ESPN and Disney would pursue it. And I do agree with you. It has to be a guarantee that the Super Bowl or Sunday Night Football is on ABC, because I cannot see the NFL taking away from NBC, which admittedly does a good job with Sunday Night Football, and giving it to ESPN without a network deal there. So I'm not shocked by this. I do think it's very interesting, though. And the scale of it's important to mention, too, because we always talk about the NFL's TV deals and how important that is to the league's financial structure. And the fact that this is $1 billion at play here for one night of the week, I think is a good example of that.
Yes. I mean, this is, it seems like the NFL wants to get these TV deals done now. Mm-hmm. And a big part of that is because over by the end of this year, you're going to see most likely viewership down, the value of the league go down, when it really should be higher during a normal year when there's full fans and full viewership. You're going to see the valuation of the league go down a little bit, and they want to keep their TV deal at top dollar as much as possible. So that's why they're trying to negotiate this out now. From Disney's standpoint, they've been wanting, you know, a Super Bowl for a long time. NFL has been staunch on not putting it on ESPN and then needing it to move to a network. To me, this is their path. This is their path to get that Super Bowl. And like you said, Disney is a huge conglomerate. You know, that over the years they've bought, you know, Marvel, Lucasfilms, you know, all some of the biggest like names.
Fox, basically.
They just bought all 21st Century Fox. They have all of it. And if you think they can't buy the Super Bowl, you're wrong. You know, they can definitely buy their way into the Super Bowl, and I think they plan on doing that. My next question then goes to, how does NBC recover from this? Because NBC does an excellent job on Sunday Night Football. I think this throws a huge wrench into NBC's plans for the future, especially if the NHL plans on splitting their partnership rights with ESPN, ironically, once again. So same company they're losing more sports to. So is this possible? Absolutely. I think this is very possible at the moment. But I think the bigger story then from here is, how does NBC recover?
It's interesting to think about NBC's structure in terms of the deals that they make in sports in general, because you look at CBS, you look at Fox, they have, you know, local games, they have national games, you know, 1 o'clock, 4 o'clock. NBC doesn't have that. NBC is purely a Sunday Night Football. And if they lose that, there's no NFL anymore on NBC. And it brings me back to the similar point about Notre Dame. You know, we all know about the legendary deal they have with Notre Dame. They get paid a fancy penny there just for that one team and just for that one game. And they get paid billions of dollars just for Sunday Night Football. So they seem to be very, very focused on making just one big deal and having it pay off for them. But now, losing Sunday Night Football, I think you bring up a good point about how are they going to recover? Are they going to get involved into the Sunday afternoon games? Are they going to change their structure? You know, I think it brings us some interesting points. And like you said, it's also part of a larger conversation about the NHL as well, where NBC could be heading in a different direction, potentially restructuring, potentially investing in different sports, and just having to reassemble where their focus is, because Sunday Night Football is probably the biggest sports entity that NBC works with right now. So losing that's going to have a big shockwave within the company, I would say.
And I think it throws a wrench into CBS and Fox were expected to renew having the AFC and NFC respectively. They were planning most likely to go from $1 billion a year to $2 billion a year, pretty much doubling what they were paying. I think this throws a wrench into that, because now NBC is thinking, well, is there a way we can get involved in the day games? I don't know if they can, because you know, CBS and Fox were adamant on keeping their positions. They liked where they were, both did. So now the question for NBC is, where do they go from here? I can say that NBC, their first and biggest priority will always be the Olympics. That is their pride and joy.
Good point.
They plan on, you know, they had put a huge investment on that through 2032. They are keeping that for the long haul. That is their pride and joy. Right below that is Sunday Night Football. So if they lose that, and they start to lose their third biggest sport, which is the NHL, I think now you're starting to get a bit worried if you're at NBC. And it should be very interesting to see how they handle that going forward. Obviously, all this is changing, fluctuating as time goes on, but it is a very real possibility that ABC can take a swing at Sunday Night Football.
The only other thing that I forgot to mention, the Olympics, that's actually a really great point, but NBC too, they have a long-term plan. This is something that Andrew Marchand talks about in place for Sunday Night Football, where currently we know Al Michaels, Chris Collinsworth are in charge. Mike Tirico would be the heir there, and they already have Drew Brees signed up to take over for Collinsworth. So there's a structure here that the NBC is anticipating having this around for a long time. And if that were not to happen, like you say, it's very interesting to think about how the company would react. Do they need Sunday Night Football is a fair question, considering the Olympics and considering I think about the Premier League, where we know that they have exclusive deals there as well. So they I think they're okay in terms of the other entities they work with here, but the NFL is certainly a big part of it. And they sounds like they were expecting to have it for many years to come. So we'll see if they're able to hold on to it from Disney and ESPN.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point with Mike Tirico and Drew Brees. And don't be surprised if Tirico and Brees try and go to ABC to take over Sunday Night Football on that end. That's because you've seen this over the years where, you know, if television deals swap, then the talent usually goes to that network. So there's some continuity there. It's the same broadcasters. I wouldn't be surprised then in that situation if Tirico and Brees jump ship and go do Sunday Night Football for ABC then. And then at the end of all this, Mike Tirico's back at ESPN So, I mean, you saw it happen when in hockey went to NBC, Doc Emmerich went there. Even when Monday Night Football initially happened went from ABC to, you know, Sunday night, you know, Al Michaels went from ABC to NBC. You know, it's not uncommon for that to happen. I think that's an interesting trend to watch too. See if what happens with Mike Tirico and Drew Brees. Wrap up our conversation when it comes to ESPN and that whole bidding war between Disney and Comcast for Sunday Night Football. So we're going to go to our next topic, which kind of flew under everybody's radar, but is really a big story, which is the Utah Jazz were sold for $1.6 billion. The Qualtrics CEO, co-founder, he is from the Utah area and the Salt Lake City area. He has been a fan for many years. Qualtrics was a sponsor of the Jazz. I think this makes sense. He's a fan for sure, and which means he'll have the best interest of the team in mind. And he's a younger guy too. He is a software tech guy. So I think you could see a trend of more tech guys, more companies, owners start to get into this market. And we're going to really get at the core of now. Okay, so the Mets were bought. Now the Utah Jazz were bought. Now the Baltimore Orioles are asking for bidders. And now a memo was sent out by Roger Goodell because he's expecting some NFL teams to be sold. I think this is starting to get at a trend that some of these owners, these current owners who bought their teams when it was in the millions of dollars, are cash strapped. They need any sort of equity they can. So they're going to be selling their teams for billions of dollars. I mean, look at this. The former, I guess now former owner of the Jazz, Larry Miller, bought the team in 1986 for $24 million.
Oh, what a steal.
I mean, the ROI on that is beyond measure. I mean, that's quite a return on investment. Going from $24 million to $1.6 billion. But I think this is something that these owners are catching on. They saw it with the Wilpons, you know. They bought the team and now they're getting paid billions. A lot of owners are picking up on this, and with the financial instability of this pandemic, these owners that bought their teams in the millions, they can't necessarily hold on and sustain it. But these billionaires are coming in. They have all the money in the world. They can just buy them out easily. And now the former owners are happy. The new owners are happy. And, you know, the former owners are now billionaires.
That's a good point. I think you bring up so many good points there. And I think in general, what it speaks to is just it's much more expensive to run a team now than it used to be. You know, contracts are going up by the year. You know, and now, especially in a time like this, when there's so much unpredictability about what the revenue stream is going to be like, you need people in power that have the ability to fluctuate with that, the ability to react to that, and the ability to sustain that. And Steve Cohen is a prime example of that. You know, obviously the richest owner in sports and coming into taking over the Mets, and even like the Jazz, that's a similar situation where, and you also talk about the point with tech companies, and I think back to Cohen as well with SNY was being talked about as being a part of that deal. It didn't ultimately fall through, but in general, just speaks to the fact that these are much more now than just buying teams. These are about buying, you know, whether it's arenas, whether it's media deals, whether it's the technology side of things or actual functioning within the arena. There's so many different elements to go into these deals where, like you mentioned, it's not just about millionaires anymore, because there's so much that makes up a team now where you need a billionaire almost to run an organization in the year 2020 and in 2021. So I think it does make sense that we're seeing this trend of, as sports are increasingly becoming more expensive, that you need owners that can keep up with those trends, especially at a time where we really don't know what things are going to look like in the coming years.
Yeah, you're right about it being more than just the Jazz. And this deal also includes Vivint Smart Home Arena, the home court of the Jazz. It includes the G League team and a AAA baseball team. So all of that is combined in this deal, along with the NBA team. So, you know, over the years, these owners, you know, acquire different things, whether that be their own arena. Sometimes teams have to rent out arenas. In this case, the Jazz own their arena. The arena is included. You know, the G League team is included. Like you were getting at with Cohen, you know, the minor league teams were included. SMY ended up not being included. But I think that's going to work itself out soon. Yeah. I think they were talking about that being a separate deal, and that will probably happen. But, you know, there are so many facets of the business. And with everything being as expensive as it is in 2020, you almost have to be a billionaire to run a team. And then all the people that initially bought the team when it was in the millions, they're looking like geniuses because, you know, once again, their ROI is through the roof.
Yeah.
Because they're now selling it for billions. And 24 million to 1.6 billion is huge. And a lot of owners in all of sports are seeing that and they're recognizing that. And that's why, you know, the Baltimore Orioles are now asking for bidders. You will most likely see a lot of NFL teams get bid on. This can become a reoccurring trend over the next year or two, where these owners are going to want to cash in because they can't necessarily afford to run the team anymore. And then themselves personally, they will be set for life, you know, with a billion-dollar purchase.
There's also a similar trend here in the teams, these three teams alone, where it's almost like these are not top tier teams. You know, these are teams that are trying to compete and trying to get to a high level. And players are going to demand certain amount of money now that you need owners in place that can spend that money. And the Mets are a prime example of that. They're anticipating a lot of big deals. The Orioles are also looking to acquire some top players this offseason. And we don't know what contracts are going to demand. We don't know what these salary caps are going to look like. We don't know what any of this is really going to look like. So that just stresses the importance of getting an owner who's in a position to really gear up a team, make sure you have the right players in place, because we don't know where else the revenue is coming from. So I think that speaks to a trend. We see a similarity across all three of these teams, and we're probably going to see it in the NFL as well.
For sure, for sure. And I mean, even look what happened with Cohen and the Mets. What's his first order of business? He reinstated full salaries to all the employees, and he's putting, you know, $100 million into the Mets Foundation. I mean, that's his first order of business as he comes in, not what player contracts are going to be signed or anything like that. He's taking care of his employees first. And, you know, in a time when the Wilpons couldn't necessarily afford to pay everyone full salaries and stuff like that, had to furlough some people, Cohen immediately came in. The first thing he did was hire them all back and give them all full salaries. And I think that kind of speaks to, you know, having a billionaire as an owner, they're able to, you know, go through a pandemic and not bat an eye. When some of these, you know, millionaire owners, maybe, you know, they had smaller businesses that turned into bigger businesses, but, you know, they're not, you know, the giant hedge funds that some of these new owners, or, you know, in this case for the Utah Jazz, you know, a giant data analytics company that, you know, not the capital they have. So I think that's kind of part of the story too, where now these owners are coming in and helping all these employees, and probably the same will happen with the Jazz now. I don't know what their situation is out there, how many, you know, their employees and stuff like that, but for sure it made an impact on the Mets and their employees. But I just want to touch on something else too that kind of went under the radar. Ball Corp, they are a Colorado-based company. They make all, you know, aluminum cups and different things like that. I kind of know them for the mason jars. They bought the naming rights to the Denver arena, which hosts the Nuggets and the Avalanche. That deal also expands across all of Kroenke Sports Entertainment to the venues in the UK for Arsenal's Emirates Stadium and in Los Angeles for the new SoFi Stadium. So basically what they're going to be doing is not only do they get a name, a arena naming rights in Denver, they're also expanding their aluminum cup project to pretty much eliminate plastic cups within all the arenas. That's kind of their big pitch here with buying the naming rights in Denver. So all the cups and stuff like that will be reusable and all made by Bolt Corp. And that'll expand into all the other different arena properties owned by Kroenke Sports.
This this reminds me of that story that you wrote for our blog in the Fordham Ram a few months back about the Climate Pledge Arena with the Kraken and how there's going to be those future initiatives that are going to focus on things like improving climate and doing things for our environment. And this isn't directly a naming situation, but there is going to be initiatives beneath it that are a part of this that are really going to try to be a more sustainable and environmentally friendly. And that speaks to a trend that you talked about, is how moving into the future, when brand identity and is so important, we're going to start seeing things like this a little more than we used to, where it's not just about a stadium name anymore. It's about what are you going to do with that name? What does that name mean? What does it stand for? And I think that's an important trend here. It's something that you brought up a few months ago now, and we're definitely seeing it come to fruition here. So definitely interesting to see, but I do agree with you, a bit of a misnaming opportunity for sure.
Yeah. And like I said, I did bring it up a bit ago about how this can become more reoccurring. This isn't necessarily, you know, eliminate plastic arena, but, you know, it really is sending the message that, you know, yes, this is Ball Arena, but what do we do with Ball Arena? We eliminate all plastic by having all these reusable cups and, you know, we're the people producing it. So again, it's that brand image that Amazon is going to be trying to portray out in Seattle. And now Ball Corp is going to be doing in Denver. So just wanted to make a quick point to mention that. We're going to move on to some sports betting news. Coming out of the election, there are three certainties we do know, which is that three new states approved sports betting. Those states are Maryland, Louisiana, and South Dakota. So more states thrown into the sports betting landscape, obviously going to be big. You know, some bigger cities, Baltimore, New Orleans, especially New Orleans, I think is the big one here. For sports betting, again, it's growing across the country slowly but surely.
Yeah, I don't know how much there is to really analyze here, but I think that last point you mentioned is really important, because not only now is it growing in states, it's almost half the country now. I think it is with 25 states now, but it's also within the states that already have sports betting, it's expanded as well, and more opportunities and more avenues to bet and gamble on games. So I don't think either you or me are surprised by this. I think it's a trend that we've been seeing for a while, with betting becoming more prevalent and a lot of sports fans doing it, especially at a time like this, as we mentioned, where people want to interact with games in ways where they can't go anymore. So it seems like the perfect timing to it. And I think it makes perfect sense that we're seeing the growth of sports betting. And I don't really feel like it's going to stop anytime soon with the amount of revenue that comes out of it.
Yeah. I mean, by the end of 2021, at least half the states in the country in the District of Columbia will have sports betting in place. So, I mean, it's slowly but surely becoming, you know, a big trend. And I think the states themselves see it as a big money producer, because they get tax back on a lot of that. And the companies love it. And more specifically, sports teams are becoming more and more favorable to it. And that is not something that was talked about maybe about 10 years ago. You know, 2010, this was a taboo subject. Yeah. And even if you brought it up on a broadcast, they would, it'd pretty much be the equivalent of saying like a curse word on air, where you would be chastised harshly for mentioning anything about betting. And now, you know, we kind of mentioned it with the XFL last week, they were putting betting odds up on the scorebug on the TV. So we've gone a long way from even 10 years ago. And these are three more states to throw into the mix. I think the biggest state here is Louisiana, because you have New Orleans, a big, big sports city with the Saints and Pelicans, and just being a big, you know, city that, especially Party City around Mardi Gras and all that. It's a big deal. It's a big deal. Now their sports betting is legal, at least by the end of 2021, in half the country. They're getting there.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's ever going to reach all 50 states because of the rules and regulations that are in certain states, but it definitely feels like a majority is where we're heading towards. And especially at a time like this where states are trying to find new ways to create revenue, this is something that's not dependent on the pandemic. It can exist around it. You know, sports are still going on. People are still at home. You can bet right from your computer. And I think that's an opportunity people are going to take advantage of. And in the states where it's now opened up, I think we're going to see a result of it.
Yeah, and the sports betting companies themselves are really now growing. Mm-hmm. I mean, even earlier this week, DraftKings hired Bryson DeChambeau as their face of golf. You know, he's a younger guy that's, you know, now going to become the face of DraftKings golf. I mean, that this shows you where betting's going. Now they're starting to bring in athletes to be the face. You know, you have Barstool is being incredibly successful at their betting app through Penn National Gaming, which they're a betting company to begin with. By using the Barstool name for betting, Penn National Gaming is doing excellent right now just because of the Barstool name, even though they were already a betting company, a sports betting company. So, you know, really the sports betting landscape just keeps growing. And it's to me, the sky's the limit. I keep seeing everywhere more sports betting partnerships, more sports betting deals. It really is the sky's the limit at this moment.
And to piggyback off that partnership point, I also saw that FanDuel has now a partnership with the Memphis Grizzlies. The first of its mm-hmm. kind, the NBA, actually an NBA team partnering with a betting company. That's incredible. I mean, that just speaks to the volume with which this is occurring at now. And you talk about Bryson DeChambeau and you talk about other examples of that. It seems like partnerships are going to be a big part of the future, and that's going to create a lot of competition and a lot of different revenue streams where we can have these type of deals that are going to be long-term and have a lot of benefits of them. So I think that definitely speaks to the fact this is not going anywhere and it's only going to get bigger over time.
Yeah, even in our area, the New Jersey Devils were one of the first with their partnership with William Hill. That was the one that really sent some waves across the sports world, where that was really one of the first teams to partner with a company for sports betting in the arena. And it was a big, big deal at the time. And now we've come pretty far from that, where a lot of teams are doing it. I mean, even a team like the New York Giants have partnered with DraftKings. Honestly, that's not necessarily something I saw coming in the future, but it shows that, you know, the owners, the Maras, and also the business strategy team and are really doing a great job at being, you know, progressive and seeing this opportunity that maybe in the past they wouldn't have seen, but they're doing a really great job at recognizing it. So we're going to touch on just two quick last stories here. Just going to touch on it briefly. Obviously, there was the situation around the World Series around Justin Turner. And say what you want about it. Just the whole thing kind of turned into a mess, both from the league standpoint about how he was allowed to get on the field in the first place, you know, before the game even started. And, you know, because by the time they pulled him in the eighth inning, he'd already exposed the entire team. It's not his fault because he didn't know. That's up to the league and the testing facility. It's a whole mess. But in light of that, something else interesting has popped up with Lysol is now the official cleaning partner of Major League Baseball. Now, I have to think that this isn't necessarily a coincidence, that there has to be some saving face here after that incident. And MLB is actually not the first to do it. NBA and WNBA have announced a partnership with Clorox. So now there's clearly Lysol and Clorox are getting into the sports partnership industry. There's going to be a little bit of rivalry there. But the point of me saying that is, you know, MLB had to save face a little bit with that whole incident, whatever happens with it, whatever you think about it. So having this partnership with Lysol, to me, actually makes a lot of sense. And a lot of leagues should be getting on this trend, because if health and safety truly is your top priority, you know, the NBA has said that multiple times and they've proved that through a partnership with Clorox. But, you know, MLB does have to be more cautious about it going forward. And that's why you partner with a company like Lysol.
One thing I will say, I could be wrong here, but I'm reading the press release and I see it's from the 14th. So that would be dated before the Justin Turner incident and the World Series. So I do think it actually makes, if that is the case, it makes it a little bit more interesting because then you think about, you look at this
deal.
They're
going to be advertising the partnership a little bit more then, aren't they?
And now you're saying, now you're saying this was in place before the Justin Turner incident even happened. So that just adds a whole nother wrinkle to it. But what this speaks to me most loudly is that this is all about getting fans back in the stands. I think this is what the number one thing that I get. On one hand, I understand you want to keep your ballpark safe in terms of the bullpens and where your teams and your players are. But I think I can imagine that they're going to try to disinfect the entire ballpark. That's what I'm seeing here with a focus on high touch spots in particular. That feels like places where you enter the arena, places like concession stands, places like seats, places where fans are going to be. And if the MLB wants to bring fans back, which we saw at the World Series and does not seem like they were doing these initiatives at the time, but it feels like as they try to go beyond 25%, they try to get more people into the ballpark, they're going to need to have the backing of a company like Lysol in order to make sure that it's done safely. And it's interesting to think about, will this actually have an impact or will it be more of just name recognition? I don't know. But I know that when I went to the movie theater, they were also sponsored by Clorox. And did that give me a bit of security? Maybe, maybe a little bit, just to know that this company put its name on it. And if that's what fans need in order to go to a ballpark, I think that's a good thing for the MLB.
Right. It gives people a sense of security to feel that they can go into a ballpark and know, okay, Lysol, you know, made sure this place was safe. Or, you know, for the NBA, okay, Clorox made sure this place was safe. I think that is kind of a big factor, and it's smart for these leagues to partner with them. I will say I did not realize that deal was made before the incident, but I think it speaks to, you know, they will be pushing something like that more now, especially with this incident.
Let me just ask you really quick here. So I'm reading this full press release, and also says this started in the 2020 postseason, apparently. They began to provide disinfection solutions to teams and players and even at the hotels of these teams as well in order to make sure that they had the proper cleaning tools, I guess, in place when they got there. So this Justin Turner incident just makes it a little more interesting that this was all in place before that even happened.
Right. I think it was brought to light kind of because of
for
the Justin
sure.
Turner incident. It wasn't really that reported, but then, you know, that whole incident came out and I started doing a little research and then I saw that. So I think that does kind of speak to, you know, the league's trying to be safe. But to me, you would want to publish that more. You would want to get that out there more because you want to get it in fans' heads that, you know, our stadium is safe. Come watch our games kind of thing. You know, Clorox or Lysol is behind us. You know, they approve it. You know, they clean it. I feel like that's a big deal for and a sense of security for sports fans. And they should be pushing that out more, especially now with the pretty much the PR incident, you know, the PR surrounding what happened with Justin Turner.
Yeah, that's what I do think, if anything, that was a bad PR move for the MLB. And talking about brand image, something that we just brought up before, another part of this deal is that there's going to be community initiatives where Lysol is going to provide, in partnership with the MLB, going to provide certain cleaning wipes and other materials to schools and other places across the country. And that, again, speaks to that trend that we brought up before about how there's so much more that goes into these partnerships now, and not just about a product, not just about a name, but about what are you going to do with that. And, you know, certainly the Justin Turner incident didn't reflect highly on the MLB, but something like this should put them in a place where they can make smarter decisions and do it safely moving into next season.
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. And then one final story we're going to briefly hit on, which is Derrick Henry, the running back for the Tennessee Titans. He had that highlight stiff arm of Josh Norman back on that rare Tuesday night game, which kind of caught the attention of all of sports. Not many Tuesday night football games going on. So everyone's eyes were on that game. And Derrick Henry just threw Josh Norman aside. That's kind of turning into highlight of the year. And it pretty much earned him a new sponsorship with Procter & Gamble to be the new Old Spice guy. P&G has been a partner with the NFL for quite a few years. And they also have a partnership with Tide that all falls under the P&G umbrella. But so you could say, we were just talking about Lysol and Clorox. The NFL has tied. So that's something the NFL can fall back on. But in terms of Old Spice, they've had multiple NFL players be spokespeople throughout the years. And pretty much that one highlight earned Derrick Henry a new endorsement deal.
And apparently that highlight is going to be the basis of the commercial that they're going to air a week from now. That's going to be his stiff
Oh,
arm is
really?
going to be, that's what I'm reading here. It's going to be an animated commercial with that as the highlight of it. So now this is just funny, but I do think it just does show a lot of the parts of the fact that athletes are fact their impact that they can have in terms of being a brand image and a brand icon. And Derrick Henry, for sure, a lot of young kids are going to remember that play. They're going to remember seeing that play and having him as the face of Old Spice. Yeah, that's I don't know about you, but you remember the Old Spice guy. You remember Terry Crews. You remember the other actor
Oh,
who was riding
absolutely.
things like the horse. I'm sure you remember all that stuff. So like that sticks out in your mind. So like Derrick Henry now taking on that role, it's going to be good for him to gain some fans and also good for Old Spice because he's got a lot of fans of his own as well. And it just seems like a feel good story to me.
Yeah, I mean, and he already had three endorsement deals, one with Pepsi, one with Dr. Teal's Epsom salts, and then Champ Sports. So he's going to add this to his group of endorsements, and it's just another one in the bank for him, another great asset for Old Spice. And I feel like this is going to be mutually beneficial for both. I mean, it's going to grow his popularity even more, because everyone, those commercials are so iconic. They really are iconic, and he's going to be the new face. So just wanted to touch on that as our final story, and then we're going to get to our games of the week. So Alex, who do you have this week?
There's actually a lot going on this week. We're looking at the schedule. This was a crowded one. College football is where both of our minds quickly went. There's two big games this week in Florida, Georgia, the first one, but Clemson, Notre Dame, obviously the big one. And Trevor Lawrence is obviously him not being there is going to have a big impact on the game in terms of its significance. But I still do think with the way Clemson played last week, there's a lot of questions coming into this. I think Notre Dame's in a good spot. I picked Notre Dame to win this game at the start of the season. I'm certainly not backing down from that now, and I'm going to take the Fighting Irish. And it should be a fun game, though, Saturday night. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, the complexion of this game has changed completely. At the beginning, I was saying this would be game of the year. And then clearly, you know, I think Alabama, Georgia was probably the game of the year. But I think the combination of Trevor Lawrence having to sit this one out and Clemson almost getting majorly upset by Boston College last week after a horrible first half, and Notre Dame putting on a very strong performance against Georgia Tech, that combination, I would be a little worried if I'm Clemson. Clemson's got to play a full 60-minute game. They cannot do what they did last week, show up for the second half. You can afford to do that maybe against a Boston College, but not a Notre Dame. And they have to play a full 60 minutes. And Notre Dame, I think they were the big underdog going into this game, assuming Trevor Lawrence was going to play. Now that he's not playing, I think it's a very even level playing field. They got to take advantage of it. They're home. They're gonna have a good, great group of fans there.
They will, yeah.
You know, they got to take advantage of it and get that win, because if they end up going to the ACC championship game with Trevor Lawrence playing, then most likely they're going to be on the losing end. But maybe if they win this week, maybe they could find a way possibly to squeak in to the college football playoff. That's my take on it. My game this week is going to be the Sunday night game, Saints and Buccaneers down in Tampa, round two of Brady and Breeze. Obviously, very competitive game for the NFC South. It's going to be that division is very tight. Those two teams are going at it. Going to be a very fun one from a much warmer Tampa Bay, much warmer than it is up
Yes.
here.
I think too, Antonio Brown's coming back this weekend, which is going to be something that we have to keep our eyes on and whether how many snaps he gets, how many catches he makes, because we know the connection with Brady. I think at this point in the season, they're both in pretty good form. I like the Bucs where they're at. I think they win this game. I think the winner of this game also wins the division. So, significant game here, and I do think we're going to have our eyes on it. Sunday Night Football, we talked about a bit of how that's going to change, and this game is a reason why it is so important to the NFL and to NBC.
Yes, we did. The best matchups go on Sunday night, which, interestingly enough, over the years, back in, let's just say about, like, you know, 15 years ago when I first transferred over, you know, 2004, 2005, the best games were put on Monday night. Now the best games are put on Sunday night. And I think ABC, ESPN are remembering that. So kind of coming full circle on this episode as we wrap it up here for our episode 7 of the SSF Sports Business Podcast. Thanks for tuning in this week. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at Fordham Sports Biz and our new website, www.bssfordham.org. We'll see you next week.